Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 3rd. I'm John Gibson, and joining me on Swallows End the Skid Day is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Yeah, I was about to call this place Skid Row, but, you know.
Oh, that would have been just as bad as I'm still trying to recover from Taciturn from the Better. Please stop.
Well, I thought we were going to have the accompaniment of drunks in the Central Road shopping street over which I live, but they've all moved on and gone on to do their business somewhere else. So no musical accompaniment tonight. So I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, man?
Thank goodness. I'm trying to shake the cobwebs from an unscheduled nap. Let's put it that way. And okay. I didn't get knocked out like some other people today in the world of boxing.
Okay.
Wow. We will knock you off your socks with this show. How about that one?
Okay. Hold on. So I gotta switch the hyperbola button from 9 to 7. Okay.
From 9 down to tone it down there, buddy. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Kyle Regnold of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to talk about the Carp, the Swallow Skid. We're going to preview Interleague. We've got a slew of notes, and we've got some high heat if we have time, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, last weekend I was at Tokyo Dome and had a chance to talk to Kyle Regnold of the Hiroshima Carp for the first time, which was a real pleasure. He's really engaging guy and really sharp. Now, he's a 30-year-old lefty, and he began his pro career in indie ball in the Can-Am League. Okay, now I don't know if how many of you remember Carlos Mirabal, who pitched with the Nippon Ham Fighters from 1999 till about 2004. And he was pitching in the Can-Am League a couple of years ago. In fact, he was pitching in Puerto Rico recently, where his family's from, where he has some roots. And so he was in the Can-Am League, started as a pitching coach, and they ended up, hey, you can still pitch. Come on, get in here. That's right. So that's where he started. And a couple of things from Deltagraphs. Now, Kyle Regnault's average fastball velocity of 145.9 kilometers per hour is the second fastest on the Carp behind Hieronymo Franzua, and he throws it about his fastball about 60% of the time. The other 40% of the time has been split evenly between the slider, change, and curve. So far this season, his fastball and his changeup have been both been quite effective, and he talks about that, which is kind of interesting. His changeup's been one of the better ones in the Central League. So, and then just before you hear it, there are three things that I'm sure some of you will know. We talk about Eric, that's Hiroshima Carp scout Eric Schulstrom.
Okay, former Carp pitcher.
I should add longtime Hiroshima scout. He's been a scout with them for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris is Chris Johnson, who we were talking about. Whom I was talking with when Kyle walked in from the outfield. And the other is PFP, which is the famous and dreaded pitcher's fielding practice. So those are the little snippets we throw in there in the interview. So let's have a listen.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. Oh, first of all, you have to tell us how to pronounce your last name.
It's Regnold.
Regnold. Okay. Yeah. So our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is Hiroshima Carp first-year lefty Kyle Regnold. Is that good enough?
Perfect.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Now tell me, speaking of being here, what was it that drove you to be in Japan? What was the inspiration or the process? Because it's never an obvious thing. For some people, it is obvious, but those are rare individuals.
Yeah. I think it was a handful of things. And, for me, getting a late start in affiliated baseball, I didn't sign with an affiliated team until I was 26.
Wow.
Which is very, very late.
Mm.
So, being that late, in baseball years, as they say. I had success with the Mets. I finished my last 2 years in AAA, had a lot of success there, but, you know, never really got the opportunity to make that jump to the big leagues. So I think after last year, you know, it was a very successful year, I think, for me. And to get the recognition from Japan and have the opportunity come up to come and play here, I think it was the right time for me in my career to say, you know, I think I want to make this jump, go over, see how things are in Japan. I've heard so much about it. The atmosphere is great. The opportunity is great. So I think it was a really good time. Everything kind of fell into place to really jump on the opportunity to come here.
How did you hear about Japan?
I had friends who who had played here. One of my coaches, Val Pascucci, played here years ago.
I know Val.
Yes. Miles Mikolas was I worked out with him two off seasons ago. So there's been a bunch of guys who have talked about it, and you know they enjoyed the experience here. My agent had a couple guys that have gone overseas in the past, so I was familiarized with it. But once they had kind of contacted us, I started looking into it more and realized that it's really a great opportunity.
So when your agent called, you were kind of ready for it mentally?
You know, he had always mentioned it, and I have always been hesitant.
Right.
Even when they had first called, I'm like, you know, like I really want to play in the big leagues here, and I know I can play in the big leagues here. It's just getting the opportunity, but, you know, looking at timing and everything, I really think it was the best time for me to come here to Japan.
Now, obviously, I know the guys in the CARP organization, I know the scouts, I know Jonathan, I know the way they prepare people. Did you feel really well prepared when you got here?
Yes, I did. And you know, one thing, talking to Eric, he said, look, you got to be prepared when you come here. Things start a lot earlier, they ramp up a lot earlier. For me, I tend to hit strides middle of the year to the end of the year. And usually August, September for me are really, really good months and strong months. So for me, I said, all right, I need to ramp it up a little early here because, you know, there's competition. You sign a contract to come here. There's still a lot of competition to make the opening day team. So
this team, yeah.
So I think it was really good. Had a couple conversations with them, and they were really clear with, hey, you know, you need to be ready. Come February 1st.
Well, Eric's been doing this a long time.
Yes, yes.
And he is really good at communicating with people
exactly
what it's like and what you need to do. So
yes.
He's
very raw. I mean, you're not going to... It's probably the best way I could put it with him. He's raw. He's, you know, he's been through it. He's not going to sugarcoat things, but I like that. Mm. And it's important to have somebody like that because they tell you what you need to do to prepare. And I think for me, I got to start on everything a whole lot earlier because of that.
Okay.
And I think it, you know, it benefited for me. I felt like earlier in the year, this year, I was kind of hitting these little, you know, mental checkpoints that I have earlier than I had in the past. And
for example?
Just like how my body feels and you know, my off-speed pitches, my changeup is usually one that I kind of fighting against myself a little bit at the beginning of the year. I felt like my changeup's been pretty good. Curveball, I'm still waiting for that to come around. But early in the year, I really felt like I was, you know, I was pitching. I felt like I was a little bit smoother than I am normally during spring training. You know, and I think the results I had in spring training showed for that. So I think it's going to be something that I continue to do over the next couple of years.
Now, let me for the listeners who haven't had a chance to watch you pitch, can you explain basically your style or your, you know, sort of what they say in Japan, the mochiaji, which is sort of your what you're good at. You know,
yeah.
What's your trademark?
So over the last couple of years, I really think I've transformed into just a guy who's very aggressive. I like to pitch off my fastball, so I'll throw a lot of fastballs. I have a curveball that has been, you know, a really good outpitch for me over the years, and this year I'm really trying to work it into the middle of the counts, throwing it early in the counts. I got a changeup that really works well off my fastball too, and you know I got an occasional slider that I throw in there to lefties and righties. So okay. It's a good little mix.
Okay, so now as a lefty, your situation is a little different from a lot of your teammates because Japan has this kind of a peculiar mix of left-handed hitters.
Sure do.
You know, and I know the right-handers really struggle with this. One of the things right-handers struggle with is throwing their change-ups and their two-seamers to these left-handed hitters whose goal in life is to hit it between third and short.
Yeah.
And it just plays right to them. And they're like going, I came to right-handed pitchers hell, you know? and so your job, there's fewer of those guys on the right side than the left hand, but you still have to adjust to guys who are basically there to, you know, I call them mental health checks.
Yeah. I'll tell you, so for me, I've always been able to pitch to lefties and righties, and, you know, I think that has a lot of value in it. But the lefties that you see here, it's a different style than the lefties that you see in the States.
Right.
And a lot of those lefties that are in the States, they try and pull it through the four hole, and that's all they do.
Yep.
And you come here and you see a little bit different of approach. It's everybody's hitting it down the left.
Right.
They may foul 5, 6, 7, 8 in a row off into the left field stands, and you just sitting there like, man, all right. You're coming inside, working outside. So it's a different approach that these hitters have. So, you know, it's been a little bit of an adjustment.
That's one of the things, and I was talking with Chris a little earlier about Carter Stewart who's coming over here.
Yeah.
You did see that news?
I did see that, yes.
And one of the things that Japan does is a lot of the players who come over here become better players. And I think one of the reasons is the diversity of the game here.
It is.
See things you're never going to see in
exactly.
the major leagues.
Yes.
And you got to deal with them.
That's right.
And one of them is that.
One of them's that. And I do think you're right in a few aspects is the attention to detail here in Japan is awesome. And, you know, you look at all these cages that they have set up on the field there in BP, and there's so much going on. This guy's working on this. They're working on this. You got catchers throwing down to second base here. You got bunt drill. So you have all these little things that sometimes you take for granted. You know, sometimes during the States, you don't do that every day. Just it's a long season.
You can't. Because you're jet lagged and you just had 2 hours of sleep.
Yes. So you have all this stuff going on, and if you really take advantage of it and you really focus during these workouts, even spring training, the fundamental stuff that we do, much more intense than I've seen over the years in the U.S. You still do it in the U.S., but I think here the amount of drills and the amount of that stuff is probably double, you know, than what I'm used to, which is good because you take those things for granted sometimes, and so I think it's a very good habit to get into, and it just kind of works right into the work ethic that they have here, and which is something that I've been impressed, but I've also been excited to be a part of, because the work ethic is really, really something else when you come here and see how hard these guys work.
Yeah, it's certainly, if you want to embrace it, there's a lot to embrace.
It really is.
And I have to ask, because one of the things when people ask me about Carter Stewart, one of the things is I would tell him, get ready to do PFP, because I'll bet in 1 year with SoftBank, he'll do more PFP than he would have done in 7 years in the major leagues.
Yeah, it's an important part of the game. And, you know, pitchers, we all do PFPs, and, you know, usually we do PFPs, we're like, oh, man, we got PFPs. But it's such an important part of the game to be able to field your position. So I'm sure he'll get his work in there. Just like everybody here, I'm sure gets their work in. And,
we could go on forever, and I often do.
Yeah.
But we've all got things to do, and it was a great pleasure meeting you
it was nice
and talking.
You too.
And so look forward to having you on our show again.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle. Great pleasure, and I am indeed looking forward to our next interview.
Looking forward to meeting you, Kyle. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, bud.
That's an impressive beard. He's got it's quite a beard. You know, it's really bushy, really solid looking. It could be paper mache for all I know. It's so solid and bulky.
You know, I call him face froze. Some guy on ESPN calls him chin pillows.
Okay, the face frill, I like that, okay.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to comment about?
I'd like to comment about the fact you cut the man off at the end. You guys, it's like you turn, you guys are talking, he's talking, and all of a sudden you make a four-seam transition to the end, right in the middle of his swing. You say,
that was
we
my
gotta go.
Up.
We gotta go. Well, that was your changeup. All right. Well, that was his fastball.
I was being
swing. Nice.
Well, I, you know, like I said, I tend to go on, and yes. I didn't, I'm conscious of that on once in a blue moon, and when I am, I want to make sure I can, you know, pop the ejector seat.
Well, okay.
At least
you hit his ejector seat.
I know. I apologize for that. Sometimes the bruises show up, but they go away.
But one thing I wanted to mention is a guy, and I was wondering how to pronounce his name as well, so I'm glad you asked. And then, but I heard him say, you know, Miles Michaelis' name, the pronunciation incorrect. So heads up, it's Michaelis, not Michaelis. So for a guy who has a difficult name, you figure... he'd be sensitive to those things. So that was interesting. I found that interesting.
Yeah, and John.
Then, well, last name at least, the surname. Okay. But to hear a guy talk about getting ramped up, he has to get ready early. And Kyle's talking about the fact that, you know, I just found it fascinating that he said he's usually better in the second half of the season, and he usually peaks in the summer, so to speak, and to hear him talk about having to get ramped up, as the way you put it, get his pitches, get his body ready earlier because they start so much earlier. And I hearken back to the times when you talked about in the past on the show that guys have to be able to prove themselves in spring training.
Right.
And have to be able to show that they can get the job done then. And then when you get to the actual games early on, if you don't look good, sometimes you don't get that second look. Mm. And so I hear him saying, you know, I had to be ready to go in February, and I had to make sure that I was, you know, I had changed my schedule. And then to hear him say, and, you know, I always talk about how I don't look at the standing so much and blah, blah, blah. And then to hear him say that he usually is at his best in the summer months. And I'm thinking, well, what are all those practice outings that you get in April and May and June? You know, how does that actually work? Do you feel like you're in good enough shape? I mean, you know, we've heard the phrase mid-season form before as well. And I just found it fascinating that, you know, and I see him, and I've seen him throw, and he looks good to me. I always try not to look at just the result and see if the process is good for both batter and hitter. It's hard to do that when you're watching, you know, three or four games at the same time. So, but there are on some occasions, especially when relievers, when you can focus on a particular game because it's late in the game. And that's usually when you see guys like Kyle, sixth, seventh inning, eighth inning sometimes. So, you know, this mid-season form thing, that whole discussion, just that one had me just thinking so much after hearing the entire interview. I was just I was fixated on that.
Ah. Well, you know, it's an interesting concept because, you know, an outsider could, you know, as outsiders do, will say, well, you know, get that stuff straightened out earlier. But, you know, people's bodies have rhythms, and people's lives have rhythms. And as I said, Chris Johnson and I were talking, and a large part of our discussion was how having a young child is affecting his rhythm, his personal rhythms. He said not at all, but I know Ernesto Mejia of the Lions, he doesn't want to say, you know, it was the child causing him to lose sleep and concern and worry. But he was,
right.
And he, you know, he wasn't using it as an excuse, but he was so stressed out after his son was born, you know,
right.
Because every little thing caused him to worry. He had he was from a family with a very attentive father, and he's a very attentive father. And that was his, you know, he was trying hard not to make his son the priority, but the son was his priority.
Right.
And it's hard. And so, you know, people's lives have rhythms, and I think that's just part of it. You know, you are who you are largely because of how you've gotten there. And I think I understand how that can happen. I don't understand why it happens, but I certainly can understand people falling into patterns like that, that it's normal for him. Now, of course, he said that he didn't expect his changeup to come along so early, but he's still, the curveball is something that he expects to come later. So that'll be kind of interesting. Of course, my concern is if he's in his rhythm a little early, it may be a little harder to maintain. You know, that's something he's not used to.
Exactly. I'm just thinking how the whole, you know, if you're trying to move up the calendar so that you're ready to do certain things, but you like, essentially he's saying he doesn't have pitches quite where he wants them. Mm-hmm. So he's working around that, plus trying to be able to contribute to the team, but mindful of the fact that he is trying to peak at a certain time. And then, you know, when he does peak, let's say he gets a lot of work and he's doing as well as, I mean, we look at Francois, whom you mentioned a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I remember he had a month, I think it was August last year that he yep. had the most appearances.
Yeah, he hasn't quite been the same since then.
Exactly. And you know, that was too much work. And he was effective
Perhaps.
And he was good. And so now you've got these two hard-throwing left-handers in the bullpen. They can split that workload, and they can possibly both be effective. But it's just, I just find it completely fascinating, because I hear guys saying, well, my, you know, especially in March and April, they're saying, well, you know, I didn't pick up a bat. Remember Steven Moya in the mm-hmm. preseason, you know, just getting your body used to doing baseball things, and that statement that he made, and then trying to get your swing where you want it. And I'm like, geez, is it really that delicate an operation that, you know, from mechanism-wise, that it could be off and you can still have some success, but it's not the success that you feel comfortable with, let's say?
Mm.
And well, I just found it fascinating. Because Kyle looks like he's having success and he's doing the right things and he looks comfortable. He doesn't look uncomfortable out there.
Well, one of the things about the Carp is the pitching coach, Tatsumi Une, is a really, he's a very smart and clever guy, but he's also, he's a little hard-headed.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of a hard-headed guy and can be stubborn and, you know, and it's just his character. And I know he had run-ins with Jay Jackson about how things were supposed to be done and the way things were done. And it's hard to imagine having a run-in with Jay Jackson because, you know, if he were living in San Francisco in 1967, he'd be going like, Summer of Love, give me a break. You guys aren't really feeling it. You know? Because he's got the love, you know, he's got it. And Une sometimes can be a little hard-headed and a little stubborn, and I can see that how that would play out in pitchers getting too much work or getting too much of this or too much of that when he just digs his heels in and does maybe what he knows is wrong, but because he's come out and said this is what we're going to do and he's going to do it.
Right.
But that's probably more insight than I have. So, but I'll just leave it that he is, you know, he has a bit of a stubborn streak, and that can manifest itself in sometimes counterproductive ways, despite all his other talents. Anyway, so that was interesting for me. Well, of course, a big thing for me is you know, the attention to the detail.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much ask everybody till they're sick. In fact, until they become tired of listening to me ask them about what they've done in Japan and how they've adjusted and if anything's made them better. And mm-hmm. some people will say, no, I'm exactly the same. But the attention to I won't run through the gamut of answers I've received, but attention to detail is one of the big ones. Let's put it this way. If you're determined to focus on your game and you don't find inspiration from how people in Japan do that,
mm-hmm.
then you're probably not really trying, because the attention to detail is really what Japanese baseball is all about. less so than doing the right thing, less so than optimal training, less so than optimal anything.
It's right.
Doing these are the checking off all those things. Yeah, so obviously that was a big thing for him. And of course, he sounded like a guy who, you know, he was kind of like, oh, attention to detail and PFP, bring it on, baby. So,
well,
so
you know, watching the way, you know, the Carp are playing now, obviously it looks like they will be in the postseason at this point. And so that makes for a very long year. So I just want to see how his results go as we go through the year and see if we see an arc, a peak, and a, you know, see, just see how it goes for him.
Yeah.
Because I think that I'm going to keep an eye on that personally.
Okay. Okay. Kyle, John's got his eye on you.
Watching you, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Paying attention.
Paying attention, exactly. All right, so let's talk about the success the Hiroshima Carp have been having. They had that long winning streak of 12 games, and then you know, the Giants were able to put a halt to it recently, but we said at the time, I think it was last week, Seiya Suzuki was one of the reasons that the Carp had been playing very well, and Xavier Bautista had gone nuts in May, and those two guys have, but there's one other player as far as the bat, and that's Doma Nishikawa, and he has a hitting streak of 25 games, so he got a hit today, so he's continuing that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but yeah, the bats have come alive, but I don't know. I just remember Michael Westbay in the Central League prediction show saying he ran simulations, and whatever simulation he ran, the Carp always finished first, and I scoffed at it, and and you know, they had that poor start, and now look at them. It took everything for the Hanshin Tigers to pull all their tricks out of the bag, score some early runs, and then hold them off today. It's just incredible the way they're playing, they're hitting. They're usually getting good pitching. I was going to say Makoto Adua. I had talked to a friend who went to see the Tigers play the Carp, I think it was a couple of weeks ago.
And when he pitched 7 scoreless innings without a strikeout?
Exactly. And my friend said that Adua had pitched okay, that he was effectively wild. And I said, well, he's been effectively wild one turn through the Central League, and nobody's really put a lot of runs on him. So that ended today. Somebody put some runs on him.
I think overall, you know, the big things that are, you know, what's different, what's the same. Of course, they don't have Yoshihiro Maro, which is a huge loss. But it's, and the other loss they've had is, and you know, I haven't seen this in the, you know, in any police stories, but apparently somebody's kidnapped Kosuke Tanaka's bat, and they're holding it for a ransom because it's just gone.
Yeah.
And I was looking, you know, I've seen some games where he's hit well, but he must have been borrowing somebody else's because, you know, it's not early, late. He was bad at the beginning. He was bad in March. He was bad in April. He was bad in May. So that is a problem. Yeah, he has been very consistent. Okay. That being said, the guys who were now, I didn't look at everybody, but basically of all their regular players, the guys who were good last year are, except for him, I mean, we didn't have a great season last year, but the guys who were good last year are at least as good as they were last year. And Tsubasa Aizawa, the catcher, is, he's having a season identical, so far identical, except he's throwing out base stealers a bit, which he didn't last year. Josuke Kikuchi is having another Josuke Kikuchi season at the bat, pretty much carbon copy. Takeyoshi Noma, who started out on fire, is now settled into exactly what he was doing last year. Now, on top of that, you've got Seiya Suzuki, who's taken a big step forward. He's having a career year. And the other guy who's having a career year is Xavier Bautista, who you mentioned. And Bautista looks like a guy who this year is going to hit 35 to 40 home runs and score 80 runs and drive in 90. Mm-hmm. So I don't see him know, he's looked like he can be that player, but I think he is becoming that player. He's becoming harder to pitch to. Now, what else on the other side is, of course, Chris Johnson, who really pitched lousy, you know, in April, and he pitched well in May. I mean, he's putting it together little by little, and he's looking okay. He's not looking like the first 2 years of Chris Johnson, which were pretty much Xerox copies of one another, but. Mm-hmm. He's looking better. He's been sick and he's been hurt and he's had all these other things going on, and he's looking good, and Daichi Osera's looking really good, and other guys, you know, Alan Curry's back to being, you know, about where he was last year, which is good most of the time. So interesting, very interesting team, and of course they always bring up these guys, you know, for the last 3 years the Carp have been this team that just takes pitchers that nobody has heard of, and all of a sudden the guy's, you know, 5-1 with a 2 ERA, you know, and who is this guy? Oh, he was the sixth round draft choice in 2016. I'm going, whoa. So seem to have they're becoming SoftBank, except with guys who can actually start, so they don't need to go to bullpen days like the Hawks are doing.
Right, or they can stay healthy.
Yeah.
Stay healthy.
So kind of interesting.
A healthy combination of both.
Well, you know, and the weird thing about the Carp, I find the weirdest thing about the Carp is that they have 8 saves this year.
That's it?
Yep.
Yeah, come to think of it, yeah, you're right. They don't either they don't need a guy to get the last 3 outs of a close game, or they're losing. But
yep.
When they win, they usually beat people up, now that you mentioned that. But, you know, I noticed the other thing is, I mean, of the guys we mentioned, in May, Seiya Suzuki hit .383, and then Nishikawa hit .366, and Bautista hit .352, and they're among the Central League leaders in May, in the top 10 in hitting. And so they're getting that. They're getting the pitching. The defense has, you know, I've talked about the fact that I thought their defense a long time ago was the best in the Central League. And they've just gotten on a roll here where, I mean, not just the winning streak. After the winning streak was broken, they started a new one. And then it just seems like they've been pretty consistently, they are able to win games. I mean, I don't mean compete or make a game of it. You talk about the starters and the fact that they're able, unlike SoftBank, they're able to actually pitch, but they're getting consistent production or effective pitching from their offense and defense every day, it seems. And today, it was Ottawa's, actually was his second loss as a starter to Hanshin this season. So, it seems like Hanshin might have his number in that respect, but other than that, they usually put a game together, and so they're really hard to get past. And it's, you say 8 saves. I'm trying to figure out why so few. They have so many wins. You would have thought they'd have 8 saves in that 12 game winning streak that they had.
Indeed, no, and very few holds, and it's weird how they're doing it because I don't. I can't figure it out. I can't figure out that relief side other than weird run balance, I guess. As you said, you know, a lot of, but they don't have like a lot of blowouts. Actually, they're probably right. I'll say that they've played so far through Saturday's games the best baseball of any team in the Central League to this point. And having said that, their record is better than it should be. But, you know, if it wasn't better than it should be, they'd still have the best record. So they've won more games than they should based on the runs they've scored, but tough. You know, the Giants were there. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm thinking this is the way it's supposed to be, Cebu Lions. How do you win with, you know, maybe mediocre defense and ERA of closer to 5 than it is to 4 for the team, and you know, no, this is the way you're supposed to win.
Well,
good pitching, good defense, and good hitting.
Yeah, balance helps.
helps.
Balance helps a lot.
That doesn't help. It's supposed to be that way. It's not that
exactly.
Helps.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I am not disagreeing with you. I mean, even though I did, you know, the extreme view is that it can't work is no, but it's a really tough row to hoe. And but having good defense, and Bill James made a comment the other day, which I kind of liked, is that somebody made this on an answer to one of his tweets, is the defense are like the seams in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look good, but if you don't have good defense, it can all fall apart. If you don't have capable defense, things can fall apart very quickly.
Huh, I thought you were going to say something like you don't notice them until they're not there.
You don't. Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say. True. That's also true. And I think that is also true, is that you when it fails to work, it becomes embarrassingly noticeable.
Yes. And with that, let's make a seamless transition into talking about the Yakult Swallows, because I thought they ended their 16-game skid today, which is fantastic for them and their fans. And I commented on Twitter because I call him Reddy. It's NPB Reddit. And I just never knew that he was that creative and that some of these Swallows fans could be that creative. And it took this long, torturous skid to bring that out. And I'm glad the Swallows won. Don't get me wrong. I'm so glad that they won. I don't like to see any teams. I remember when the Lotte Marines went through the 18-game losing streak, and I was living in Nagoya at the time. And this is the before time, people, when there was really not much going on the internet, and you know, I had cable TV, but it wasn't showing all the games. So basically, we all found out by watching one game what was happening in the other games. But if you didn't watch that one, your one game, you know, I was in Nagoya. If you weren't watching the Giants game, or if you weren't watching baseball on BS that night or whatever, you had to wait till the news to find out really who won. And mm-hmm. so every night on the news, I was working late a lot those days. And so I'd come home, we'd be watching the news, and we would see whether Lotte won or not. And after a while, it just got to be, come on, guys, come on. You know, at first you don't care. You know, at about 10 or 12, you don't care. But after that goes on for a week, you really start to care, and you feel bad for that team wherever it is. And, you know, I was feeling bad for the Swallows. But there was some really funny stuff going on Twitter with Reddy and some of the other guys. And I really enjoyed seeing them work really hard to put a lot into their memes and their their comments. And I'm going to miss that.
Hashtag high heat.
For selfish reasons, I'm going to miss that. That was fun.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. See, I did notice, and I think this is, of course, why it's appropriate to the comment about the defense, is I was trying to look, you know, what's going on with these guys, and I found it somewhere, and I can't find where. Oh, here it is. I wrote it on the 31st, which was Friday, when the streak was still in, not quite full blown yet, but I was trying to think about what is going on with these guys, and I looked, and they're actually, their run scoring was a little off, but really what happened was they gave up hits at inopportune times, and it seemed like they did it a lot, especially the two outs, runners in scoring position, which mm-hmm. nothing's going to kill you faster than giving up a hit where the guys are going to take an extra base. With two outs, you're one out away from it, and I don't need to add on more pseudoscience, but before the streak started, the Swallows had a 749 OPS, and their opponents had a 730 OPS in all mm-hmm. the games through before May 14th. Since then, the Swallows' OPS with runners in scoring position has dropped from 808 to 534.
Well, that's significant.
That's significant. But the worst thing was while they hit okay with runners in scoring position, with two outs, they didn't change. That was with less than two outs. So they weren't building rallies. The Swallows weren't building rallies. They'd cap them off as about as well as they had, but they weren't building them. But when the Swallows' opponents, through Friday's loss, the Swallows' opponents were batting 441.
Okay.
When they put the ball in play with two outs and runners in scoring position.
Okay.
Yow.
That's too high.
That's too high. And that's not counting the home runs, guys.
Wow.
That's only balls in play. That's only balls that are that are ostensibly potentially catchable. Now, we're not talking about a lot of at-bats. It's probably 40 at-bats, but it was just ugly. It was like they were, you know, you can see it happening. Okay, we're almost, we're not out of it. Oh, and here comes two more runs.
Right, and that kind of, I know that you're watching Pro Yaki News now, and you probably saw that they mentioned the fact that they had a bunch of errors. I think it was, when the streak hit, probably about a week ago, and they mentioned the number of errors that they had had during the skid, and then it just became a thing. It became, you know, they're going to make an error every day. It's going to lead to some runs, it seems, and then it just exacerbates the problems. But here's one of the guys who's a Swallows fan who tweeted something out. I said, before the skid, because remember, the Carp were playing really well, and the Swallows playing really poorly at the same time. So before the skid, or during the skid, the Carp in May essentially won. They went 24-1, so they had one tie. And but before the skid, that they were three games under 500 and in fifth place. And then after the skid, the Carp are now 13 games over 500 and in first place. Meanwhile, the Swallows, they were five games over 500 in second place. And because of the skid, they are now 10 games under and in last place in the Central League. So that's what a bad... And this, it started on... their last win before today was May 12th, and it was a 4-1 victory over the Giants. And I kind of remember that game because Hirotoshi Takanashi and four relievers beat Shun Yamaguchi, who was the pitcher of April, and that they pinned the first loss on him. And they out-hit the Giants 9-4 and pitched around two errors that day. And then starting on the 14th of May, they seemingly made an error a day at least and could not win until today. So congratulations. I'm glad they won. I really am truly glad they won.
I did see the one I counted the other day that there had been seven. I forget how many errors there had been made. In NP, and how many times runners had reached base on errors during the Swallows streak? But I think it was 72, and the Swallows had 1/6 of all of the NPB runners allowed. The Swallows defense put on 1/6 of all the runners who reached base on errors during that time. So that was pretty ugly. And another thing that struck me today was. The streak started shortly after they lost their closer, Taichi Shiyama. And he, who pitched today, gave up a run.
And he's back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the Swallows had, although they did play badly overall, they had games where, you know, they didn't look like they gave up. I mean, they had a couple of games where they got their heads beat in early and they kind of went like, okay, things aren't going our way. And nothing went their way the whole game, and they ended up losing that one, the Sunday's game to the Carp by, 13-1 or 13-0.
I don't remember.
So, but most of the games were closer. Two of the games against the Carp, they stranded five. They lost by, they had the tying runs on base in the ninth inning with very few outs, but. Shota Nakazaki got two of his eight saves despite putting five runners on base in two innings. So I like the fight they put up. I didn't, you know, but their defense appears to be a problem, and I think shortstop is a problem.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about that, the injury to Naomichi Nishiura. That has been a problem, and they brought Keiji Obiki off the bench, and he's played a little bit at short, and he's playing some third, and but that's a problem, and that needs to be mentioned, because that's part of, you know, again, I think Tony Barnett, when he was on the show, and I think I referenced this last week, is, you know, you've got to make those routine plays, and that's what Obiki did for them at the time that Tony Barnett was pitching for the Swallows. But he's kind of an older player now, and that's really not even a stopgap, I don't think. And he had his share of poor play at shortstop, but it seemed like everyone they put there decided to take turns making poor plays there. Now, not necessarily errors, but not getting outs.
Yeah, kind of haphazard goal, so. and bad luck, and, you know, a lot of things. I mean, you looked
everything.
At that.
It's
and you
never
went,
one thing.
You went like, I know. So I think some of it was, you know, more balls hit to where guys couldn't get them, and then, you know, there's a little of that as well. So
yeah, the pitching. You just say the pitching.
No. No.
I mean, you know, I know what you mean, but I'm just saying that also goes with the pitching. Because, look, we were talking about, I think, when Zach Ikema was on the show 2 years ago doing the preview show for the Central League, and he's a big Swallows fan, and he was making light of the fact that their rotation was not the top of the line rotation. And
right,
was,
yes, but I'm
really
not talking
about it.
But John, you're missing the point.
I know what you're saying. You're saying that hit them when they ain't. Hit them where they ain't, and they were able to do that.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that the balls that were not hit well were missing, a lot of those were just missing fielders. I mean, there's no way they could have caught them. That's what I said. Now, I wasn't talking about the fact that they gave up more balls that were a hard hit, which is what you were talking about. So
I'm not necessarily talking about
well,
that.
Well, you made it sound like the pitching was bad, period.
No, and I'm just saying that
I was saying
they're giving up batted balls as opposed to getting strikeouts or to...
Well,
as
that's...
Opposed to,
yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're not a big strikeout team. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that more of the balls were found holes than before. I mean, that happens. So.
I know I know exactly what you're saying. I think you're
okay.
I might have led you astray, but that's not,
you did
not
lead
necessarily
me
what I where I meant. I just meant that they weren't getting enough strikeouts.
You were confusifying me. Okay.
That's part of what their problem is with the staff, is that they don't have a lot of guys who are going to generate those kinds of strikeouts, and that's
yeah.
what happens. And Alzora tweeted out the number of times
the
team has given up at least 5 runs in a game.
Mm-hmm.
What team do you think that's leading the way in NPB? You wouldn't have a clue. It's the team that we rail on about the pitching. It's the Cebu Lions, with 31 times they've given up at least 5 runs in a game. And right behind the Lions are the Swallows
Eagles?
At 26. And that's through June 1st.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, so, I would think it would be one of those three teams, the Eagles, the Swallows, and the Lions, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And the team that has given up 5 runs or more the fewest is the Lotte Marines.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chunichi's at 18, yeah. Lotte at 17, Chunichi and Hiroshima at 18.
Yeah.
So losing close games is what they do. But yeah, I totally understand it. And it's, you know, this rotation is still, I mean, I think we expected to see a little bit more.
I'm not certain we can actually qualify the Swallows pitching as having a rotation.
I think that's true as well.
It's like a lot of guys. It's more like a Lego set.
Ooh, and I have a story. About one of the rookie pitcher who threw on Saturday.
Yeah. What's up with that? Let's take a guy who hasn't been good in the minors. You know, basically he strikes guys out, but really hasn't done anything else. He gives up lots of walks and puts a lot of, you know, and gives up some hard hit balls and such. And let's take that guy who hasn't really had success anywhere as a professional, and let's say throw him out on the mound and say, "Hey, stop this record losing streak for your in your pro debut."
It's called
who was smoking crack?
Hashtag high heat.
Well, at that time, I'm sure all of them were trying it.
Could have been.
So I've been going to my gym for about 4 years, and there's this older woman, and I say that knowing that it's a relative. She's older than I am, so she's older, and she is there every day, and she's like the hardest working person at the gym. In fact, when I started, I began to wonder if she was part owner, because she was there every day that I was, and you know, I go in the morning and she's there, mm-hmm. and this woman is working too hard, and she's older. That's not good, but I mean, she never breaks a sweat. You know, she's just there doing, you know, going through her workout. And mm-hmm. so, like I said, I've been there for 4 years now. And so people know, they've asked me, you know, they assumed I taught English. And I said, no, I don't teach English and blah, blah, blah. And so they know that I go out to watch baseball and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other. And so she told me last year in October that her grandson had been drafted by the Swallows. He's a pitcher. Oh. His name is Noboru Shimizu. And
wow.
You know, he was Yakult's first pick last year, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I said, if I ever see him on the first team this year, I'll say hello, blah, blah, blah. So I see him, you know, I see that he's going to start. And I don't go to the gym so much during the week these days because it's getting the kids to nursery school, blah, blah, blah. So I went to the gym this morning. She's there. I said, hey, I saw your son throw, you know, and she kind of laughed and said, yeah, that was not so good. I said, well, what did you tell him after the game? She said, I didn't go. I'm mm-hmm. like, what? She said, yeah, Yokohama's too far. I'm like, what? I said, well, you know, he's only going to get one debut, but I'm going to stay out of the family matters. I just thought, that's interesting. Yeah. So anyway, I go to the same gym as Shimizu's grandmother. So, and I said, she said, root for him. And I said, well, you know, there's no rooting from the press box or anything like that, but I hope he does well. And, you know, one day I'll introduce myself and tell him that I work out with you every day.
Just well, I had a acquaintance who was connected with Naoki Miyanishi, because I knew somebody whose son who played baseball, who played, I guess, college ball with Miyanishi.
Oh, Naoki Miyanishi. You had me. I'm thinking Swallows player. You're talking about the Fighters reliever.
Fighters. Yeah, the guy who gets a vote in the MVP voting every year. First place, baby, MVP, 2016. Anyway, so my friend was telling me, you know, you got to interview him. And I said, yeah. And that's like, I think I've spoken like three words to him in his career.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. All right, anyway. We got to get off the Swallows. We got to get off them. Congratulations for winning and ending that ugly streak. And hopefully they can put on a. I mean, you know, I thought they started out really well this season. Maybe they had an extremely good start. Now they had an extremely bad month, and now they'll level off.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you enjoy the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll probably like jballallen.com too. jballallen.com is full of writing, research, and news related to the game I've been covering for more than 25 years. Now, any subscriber who writes and tells me he heard about the website on this podcast will get an additional month added to the regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support.
All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the start of Interleague, mm-hmm. which will kick off on Tuesday here. And it's one of my favorite times of the season. And just a little friendly reminder, the overall record is the Pacific League leads the all-time head-to-head over the Central League like 1,000,000 to 1.
No.
It's 1,044. Yeah, 1,044 and 920 with 56 ties, and that's since 2005. Now, there have been varying numbers of games each year. I think not each year, but through the years, they changed the format. I kind of don't like this format. I think 18 games isn't enough, but they don't listen to me, and they don't care about my opinion. I would like to see them play 20-some-odd games. I think that would be a better situation.
Well,
whatever.
Since they went to the 18-game format in 2015, which I hated the first year, because I didn't have it, it messed up my park data. But since they've done that, You know, so their winning percentage, the PL's winning percentage overall has been about 530, a little higher than that. Since 2015, it's 554.
Ooh, for the Pacific League.
Yeah, it used to be something like 525. So it's getting it's getting uglier and uglier. And a couple of people volunteered this since we're talking about Interleague. The former Secretary General of the Pacific League, he said, of the Central League, told me one year he was at the All-Star game and he was watching BP and he's going, the Pacific League bats, the balls coming off the Pacific League bats just seem hard. They rang more. They made more.
I heard a radio color analyst say something very similar the other day. Yeah.
Okay. So and then that was 2 weeks ago on Monday. I had lunch with this guy, and then last Monday I was speaking with a friend who works for NPB, and he told me exactly the same thing. And you know, I think what it is, because I of course then being me, I looked for it. I thought, well, you know, we don't have StatCast, I don't have TrackMan, I don't even have an abacus pretty much. You know, I got to go out there and, you know, hold my thumb, you know, look, eyeball every pitch to see, get a measure almost. But I looked to see how I measured it before, which is how do teams fare against their own league and against the opposite league in May and June in their home games where they're playing in their own stadiums and against opposing teams in their home stadiums. So the stadium is a constant. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I've seen that basically what happens is Pacific League teams come in and they cause more trouble it's not just the pitching. It's not just
not
the
just
pitching.
The pitching. Yeah.
It's not, people told me, oh, it's the pitching. You know, Alex,
right.
It's the pitching.
Yeah, we've heard that.
But it's not just the pitching. The hitters do better. The hitters are better. But the interesting thing I found was that I looked for what happens when they put the ball in play. Do you know, you think if they hit the ball harder, then they would get more extra bases. They'd have a higher batting average. Pacific League batters would have a higher batting average against Central League pitchers than Central League batters do.
Okay.
Right? And Central League batters would have a lower batting, you know, essentially they'd have fewer hits than Pacific League batters do.
Well, fewer extra base hits?
Fewer hits, fewer extra base hits, basically.
Okay.
But they don't really. I suffer from a kind of a small sample size for your own league because Interleague takes up a whole block. You know, it's from May to June, and there aren't a lot of May and June. It used to be May to June. Now it's just June, but there used to be very few games in May and June against your own league, so it's kind of a smaller sample size. But anyway, I don't see it, but I do think there is one thing, is that the Pacific League has the guys who do... The Pacific League is weird because they have, I think, more guys who hit... They have more slap-and-run guys in the Pacific League. They've got more... And I think this comes from having bigger outfields. Bigger
stadiums. Orange does for sure.
Sure. I think they have more of them, but the guys who do try to hit the ball hard in the Central League and the Pacific League, I think that's where we see the difference.
Okay.
Those guys really smoke it much more than the CL guys do.
I'm looking at the standings now, and the Eagles lead the Pacific League. They have 29 wins. The Carp lead the Central League with 33 wins, and the Tigers have 29 wins. So the way the races are playing out right now, it's really, really close. But I think once the Pacific League gets to feast on the Central League here, as it's what usually happens, that we're going to see some separation. Maybe some team gets some separation in the Pacific League by doing really well. Now, a couple numbers before we move on.
Did you say separation in the Central League?
I'm thinking separation will occur if it occurs in one league, it'll probably occur in the other league. But
yeah, last
I'm
year
thinking
certainly,
maybe Pacific League.
certainly the Yakult Swallows basically bought second place by winning Interleague last year. They went in kind of so-so, and they did better than anybody, and the rest of the Central League did what the rest of the Central League tends to do.
So I'm thinking the separation will occur a little bit more in the Pacific League. We already have some separation in the Central League with the Carp, you know, with the ridiculous run that they're on. So anyway, a couple numbers before we move on. The team with the most wins, I think I looked this up on Baseball King. The team with the most wins overall since 2005 is, of course, the SoftBank Hawks, the team that has finished with the best record the most times in interleague play. And they have 203 wins, followed by Nippon Ham at 178, so it's not even close. And then Lotte with 176. And the team with the most losses, and I always talk about how bad the Hiroshima Carp play against the Pacific League, but it's DeNA with 200 has the most losses, and Hiroshima at 181, and then Rakuten has 178 losses. So
yeah, but that's almost not fair because Rakuten was the new team in 2005.
So they
went through 3 years where they were basically glued to last place.
Yeah. Okay. But they did. They seemed to do okay when they needed to. But let's move along. We've got to move on. And so Interleague is going to be starting on Tuesday. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. another year of rooting to see if the Central League can just hang on. Just stay close. Just stay close, guys. All right, you can do it.
Prove you're not as bad as we all think you are.
All right. The SoftBank Hawks did indeed sign Carter Stewart. They had a press conference that was held in Newport Beach. I thought you said it was going to be here in Fukuoka. You lied to us.
It's going to be in Fukuoka tomorrow.
I see. All right. That's Monday for the people who are listening whenever they're listening. All right. So they had a press conference the other day, and super agent Scott Boras started out by speaking, and he said, he basically said, before turning things over to the other people, he said, he used the term "the land of the rising arms." You did hear it, okay? Which I thought was a nice line, and I'm sure he was excited to use it, and it seemed really good. But if you stop to think about it, what does it really mean? Does it mean the arms in Japan are getting better because we're seeing pitchers go over there and have some success in Major League Baseball and blah blah blah, or does it mean because this supposed, because we don't know if it's a groundbreaking move or not. I mean, we can call it a groundbreaking
move. We do know it's a groundbreaking move.
Well, it's just different.
Because nobody's done it. That counts, yes.
It's just different. But I mean, for me,
groundbreaking. Nobody's done it, period.
I got you. For me, groundbreaking means you're starting to build something, okay? And that's when you're having the groundbreaking.
Well, you're the one who used groundbreaking.
I said for me.
It's precedent setting. Let's leave the architecture out of it.
Okay, you leave the car architecture out of your comments. I'm going to put it in mine. And so, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I just think that when you're talking about Japan versus the U.S., I think Japan has had really good arms for a long time. So I'm not sure that the rising arms are in Japan. I think when you talk about a guy coming over from the U.S. and starting his career over here, you know, I'm not sure that he's going to improve the quality that much. He might, and he might not. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out.
I don't think he's going to improve the quality of Japanese pitching that much. But I think, and I've thought for some time, that Japan's, and I agree, it's all on my website, but I agree in some parts with Scott Boras that Japan is a better place to develop young players than the U.S. minor leagues.
Right.
100% better. I mean, absolutely so much better.
You know how I feel about that, and I mentioned it last week as well.
Okay. It's for a variety of reasons, primarily because it's more diverse. You see things you'll never see in America. You'll see here. You'll face much harder competition at the because the talent level's not deep. You'll get to the majors sooner. You'll face really, really outstanding competition that guys that he would be he'd be in double A in the States, and in Japan he's facing batters who are basically world-class hitters. Not not a lot of them, but those guys. So anyway, so there's a lot of things to be said about Japan, living, as Scott pointed out. Sorry, Scott. Mr. Boris pointed out the living conditions are vastly better. They pay the players a living wage and so on and so forth. But what I want to know, and I was getting all these curious flashbacks for the past 2 weeks, and the press conference, they were coming hot and heavy. When I asked Scott Boris, why don't you go to Japan in December? Why don't you go to Japanese teams and say, let's sign my guys because MLB draft is basically a scam to pay really valuable players nothing. And then they can go to Japan, play for 6 years, and come back as free agents. I asked Scott Boris. This is on my website, too. You can hear that conversation. And he said, oh, it can't happen. And I said, it can't? He said, no, because, and he's not the only agent. Three agents told me, they told me this. U.S. and Canadian citizens, if they go overseas, will always be subject to the U.S. draft. They can never become international free agents. And a few months ago, I looked at the rules and I said, huh? It says foreign residents, not foreign citizens, not U.S. citizens. So a U.S. citizen who is a foreign resident can be an international free agent, according to the rules. Well, and so what I want to know, Scott Boris, is were you lying to me in December when you said it can't happen? Or had you not thought about it in December? Because I've been bugging the SoftBank Hawks for a couple of years, saying, you know, what you guys ought to do it's sign top American amateur talent, because I was so annoyed by how MLB treated Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah,
that high-handed, arrogant approach that they, of course, had already been dishing out to their amateurs. I thought Japan's a perfect place to come because the gap between SoftBank can get vastly more value out of Carter Stewart than they pay him, and they can pay him vastly more than MLB can pay him. So why not do it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, obviously we've got this kid, Roki Sasaki, who throws hard, and the major league teams are looking at him and salivating, and he's a high school player over here. I think, what did he hit? 161 kilometers. So
several people had him at 161. The Chunichi Dragons, had him at 163 one day.
Yeah, the point being that, you know, these young players who are unsigned can choose where they want to go and have freedom, and he's one of them. Maybe Sasaki will sign here in Japan. Maybe he'll go to the States. So I like the idea and the notion of people being able to decide when and where they want to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Even if you're a free agent and you leave a team and you in Japan and you go to another team in Japan, like Yoshihiro Maru of the Carp going to the Giants, and Hideto Asamura of the Lions going to the Eagles. That's, I mean, you know, anybody who would, we make job changes all the time based on salary, and I don't see any problem with it, and you make these decisions. So
I'm really interested, because if, I mean, in this experiment, I mean, it could work out badly because nobody knows, but the people I talked to, Chris Johnson had a comment. He said, A, he wants to come, and B, as long as he's not some dumb 19-year-old who stays out all night, he'll be fine, you know?
Yeah, well, good luck in doing that in Fukuoka, because everybody's going to know who you are.
he's going to be in Chikugo.
I don't even know where that is.
It's like near Kumamoto. It's like an hour from Fukuoka City.
Yeah, good luck with that. We have some notes. So the players of the month of May. And so that should be fairly easy again in the Central League. For me, I'm going to go with the best position player, Shuhei Takahashi of the Chunichi Dragons, just because he has the .400 batting average.
.417, baby.
And he has a good
He had a lot of RBIs.
RBIs to go, yeah, to go with it. It wasn't just that they were singles.
He wasn't the best player, but he'll probably win the award.
Yeah. And so, but Suzuki, Seiya Suzuki is right there at 383.
Best.
And yeah, and he had eight home runs as opposed to Takahashi's three. And,
you know, objectively, I think Takahashi probably should win it. Because for a variety of reasons, he
29 RBIs, that's a lot. Yeah,
and he's I'm not talking about RBIs, triple crown stuff. I mean, he plays a more valuable defensive position. He's not quite as outstanding as Suzuki is, but he also accomplishes that playing in a very, 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 very hard hitter's park. So, yeah, more to him, more power to him. But of course, nobody cares about that stuff.
Yes, I know. Well, whoever these people are who make these decisions certainly don't care, right? And then, as for the pitcher, I think it's going to be Shota Imanaga.
I agree. I thought this really, it's hard to see anybody else, but yeah. 4-1, 1.78 ERA. Okay, give him the award. Don't wait till next Sunday.
Don't wait. But in the Pacific League, it's going to be interesting. There's a really close battle. Now, you've got Shogo Akiyama, who has the 400 batting average. And, wow, he's got 9 home runs. He did hit for a lot of power. He's got 13 RBIs, though, with those 9 home runs. So he didn't really drive in a lot of runs. But he's a leadoff hitter, so give him a break. And besides, that team, everybody hits so many home runs, there's nobody to knock in a lot of times. Don't blame him.
I have, of course, my opinion is the best hitter. I would think Akiyama is, the best player.
Correct.
But nobody, of course, nobody cares about that. They'll look at they'll either look at the 402 average or, you know, all the power and RBIs that Alfredo Despaigne has. So that'll be interesting to see. I think Despaigne had a better offensive month. I think Akiyama's had a better month altogether because, as we know, Alfredo Despaigne isn't out there playing in center field. So try that
on.
Right, exactly. So I prefer Akiyama, but, you know, is it the best hitter, best player? Best player is Akiyama. Best player is Takahashi. Both very close. I think they'll both win it, but for the wrong reasons, of course.
Wrong reasons. That should be
a movie. because they don't care about defense, and they don't care about how many walks you draw, how many runs you score, or what defensive position you play. So, it they look at your RBI, your triple crown stats, and your stolen bases, and then you're the guy.
And maybe the OPS. Yeah, I think Despaigne probably gets it.
I don't think so.
Again, I always say, well, he's got the OPS, the 1285 OPS. You're right.
But nobody knows about it because in order to get to OPS, they have to understand what on base percentage is, and they don't.
But yeah, I like the 25 RBIs for him and the 11 home runs. So I don't know. I think he's got a good chance. We'll see. And then pitcher? What about pitcher? Yeah, what do you
Senga, have? Kodai Senga, 3-1, 1.75 ERA, 43 Ks, best in NPB. It's kind of a slack month for wins in the Pacific League after that amazing April. But 3-1 will probably do it.
Okay. All right. Also, now I talked about it. I touched on it earlier. Ryoma Nishikawa of the Carp has hit in 25 consecutive games with his hit on Sunday. The longest hitting streak in NPB is just 33 games, and it was Yoshihiko Takahashi who did
also
it.
Also of the Hiroshima Carp.
Hiroshima Carp, yep, in 1979. And so I usually, when a guy gets to about 20 or so games, I start to focus in on it. It hasn't really become a big thing. You would think in a country where, you know, contact hitting is a core value of being in the batter's box, that they'd have something like a 45-game hitting streak, or maybe 40, but 33 just seems so low to me, and it's so strange how no one gets to 30. And I think the last guy I remember, I might be wrong, the last guy I remember getting to about 30 was Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers. And but you would think, you know, that guys, especially like all the little players, the slap and run guys that Japan produces, that somebody would be able to speed their way to, you know, 30 games with a few bunts and and some dunkers and dinkers and
or the year Shogo Akiyama set the record for hits in a season, you would think.
Yeah.
But
it's so, but of course, 33.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird.
It is. Because so he's 8 games away from that now.
And you got guys who, you know, who are really old school and don't strike out a lot.
It's strange.
It is interesting. And I don't really have an answer for that question. But it is interesting. And the other thing is, I haven't really heard about it.
Yeah, it doesn't get news until I think the media doesn't really pay attention.
You said Nishikawa, and I said, which Nishikawa? Either Haruki. Well, he wouldn't know about it. He could have 25 game hitting streak, and if nobody told him, he wouldn't know.
Right, right. And one other note, Shinosuke Abe of the Giants hit his 400th home run on Saturday against the Dragons, and just a great, great player. He's a surefire Hall of Fame player.
Oh yeah, first ballot. This is a guy really, you know, is kind of born in the wrong country, because he would have been a great, great major league catcher. Just a smart guy with an eye for the game and a quick bat. And of course, by the time he was eligible to be a free agent, he was older. He came out of college, and that's a really, really, really hard transition to make. But he would have been a good catcher in the majors, as smart as he is.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a joy to watch, because just would have been fun. But still, a great career, a great guy. I don't know anybody who isn't a big fan of his. And thank you, Dan Evans, for the kind words.
Yeah, Dan Evans tweeting about it. Yeah, tweeting about how great a player he is. And I think he actually tweeted here since we've been recording here. So he replied.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
I wanted to break down his home runs, the 400 home runs. So our buddy Alizora on Twitter gave the breakdown of how many home runs he has against each team. And he has hit the most home runs against the DeNA Bay Stars.
That's not a surprise.
Which makes sense because of the park. The parks that they play in. They play in two
and they're pitching
parks,
and they're pitching,
so.
And DeNA's pitching was worse during that period. Most of that time, it was like it was not the worst, but it was bad. It was not as good as it's been couple of years. The Swallows 82. Were better. The Swallows had a better home run park, but their pitching was better too. So.
Okay, so yeah, 82 home runs against the Bay Stars, 78 against the Swallows, 76 against Hiroshima. And he's hit the fewest home runs against a Central League team, against the Dragons, 51. Ooh. And everything else is just interleague stuff. So, course, it's fewer against the Pacific League teams. So, congratulations to him. I would expect that we're going to hear a retirement announcement from him later in the season too, so we'll watch out for that. Okay, no questions this week. We will get to them next week. Thank you very much for listening. Anyone who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Send us MP3s that way. Keep them under a minute. Hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the hashtag #HighHeat, or leave us a comment on the Facebook page. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.